guest live show in which, as usual, we'll be talking about integrative medicine for cancer in all its many forms. I'm Robin Daly, chairman and founder of the UK charity Yes to Life that helps people with cancer to understand and to access integrative medicine. In today's show, we're going to be having a last preview of the subject matter of the Yes to Life annual London conference, which is entitled Starting the Conversation, exploring ways in which integrating conventional cancer care and lifestyle medicine can improve outcomes. I'm going to be speaking to one of the central figures in the movement towards integration, Patricia Peat, founder and principal of Cancer Options, a consultancy helping people to explore a broad range of options from both conventional and lifestyle medicine. Patricia is the author of The Cancer Revolution, a collaboration with Yes to Life, and a guide to navigating the emerging territory of integrative medicine. I'm talking with Patricia over Skype at Cancer Options in the Midlands. Hi Patricia, thanks very much for coming on the Yes to Life show.
You're very welcome, hi Robin.
So you've been interested in and supporting integrative medicine since long before the term was even coined. Your background in conventional oncology, combined with your unparalleled overview of unconventional methods in use internationally, has given you a unique position to monitor and to assess the strengths and the weaknesses of both paradigms, and probably most importantly, to appreciate the potential for combining the two. So what sort of impact do you think the introduction of a broad spectrum of lifestyle medicine could have on the experience and the outcomes of conventional cancer treatment here in the UK?
Well, frankly, Robin, the term broad spectrum will actually achieve a broad improvement right across the whole spectrum, from, you know, the very simple patient experience and empowerment, right down to influencing how some of our newer treatments can work and carry on working for much longer than they do now.
Right. Well, that kind of sets the background for what I want to talk about today. And so the subject is our forthcoming annual London conference. It's called Starting the Conversation, Exploring Ways in Which Integrating Conventional Care and Lifestyle Medicine Can Improve Outcomes. So it's called Starting the Conversation because, like all situations that involve hostilities, and I think you can attest to coming across a few of those before now, the first step towards understanding and collaboration is to talk. Now, I know that you're constantly making efforts in this direction. Do you think we're making any progress?
We're making some, yeah, inroads are being made, and it does feel like the momentum is changing in some areas quite a bit and in other areas less of a bit. You know, I must say, I thought when I first sort of got into integrative medicine about 18, 19 years ago, that we're having a start the conversation. I think I'd have stopped in bed, frankly. I do find it hard to believe that, you know, we're still this far on, and even the basics like, you know, have a good diet is still not being addressed fully across the board. But I think, yes, there are inroads being made in certain areas. More to do, I think, in the medical profession, to do with other staff, with nurses, perhaps with dietitians, certainly with surgeons, rather than with actual oncologists themselves, by and large. Lots of other types of staff working in different areas seem to have a more of an interest and more of a willingness to have that conversation with their patients. I mean, that is a generalisation about the medical profession, because some doctors are very, very supportive of their clients, and some doctors, you know, go out of the way to take an interest and help them, etc. And some hospitals do. By and large, it's not a uniform response, and that's what's making it very difficult for people.
Would you like to tell us of one or two? I mean, I know you've done particular things where you have actually gone in and engaged directly with hospitals and with hospital staff to talk about integrative medicine. Do you want to tell us a bit about some of your experience?
Always interesting, that, and always something I look forward to with great enthusiasm. I mean, for example, I got invited to the Cromwell Hospital in London to the radiotherapy department, and went in very much armed to the teeth with an awful lot of good research to support everything I had to say entirely, And I had a good audience, and a mixed audience. There was dietitians, there was hospital managers, there was radiologists, nursing staff, who listened and expressed some of their concerns about complementary medicine, integrative medicine, you know, which we addressed, and took a great interest in the actual research that we could present and the broader picture that, you know, the theories are sound, but perhaps the research hasn't been done to the level that, you know, would be achieved by a randomized trial. And all in all, the response was very, very positive and interested. And, you know, yes, there's clearly evidence, there's clearly value. The big thing then came, the big question then came at the end was, okay, that's great, but how do we convince the doctors? And there wasn't a single doctor in the room.
Right.
And they expressed that their concern was they're interested and they see value, but, you know, doctors are not getting on board. Mm. Now, where we do see, you know, more change, I think, is probably, I suppose it is more in the private sector than it is within the NHS confines.
Right.
Because I think, you know, it comes down to a bit more of a sort of customer-led service. Mm-hmm. And custom demanded service rather than, you know, being told what you can have. So, you know, and then I had another experience where I went into a Maggie's centre to speak to an esophageal support group, which is a, you know, esophageal cancer is something that can come with a degree of debilitating weight loss and cachexia. And again, talking to them about that and presenting the evidence on how cancer metabolises glucose, which is always an odd point with the medical profession, despite the fact that, you know, the clinical evidence that adds up is quite overwhelming.
Right.
To be told, you know, and presenting that, to be told by the nurse specialist who come in the room, who sort of jumped up and shouted out that they must eat sugar or else they're going to lose weight. And that was actually argued then by the people in the audience with her. And she left then. You know, but really what she was doing was saying, we don't actually know how to help people maintain their weight and energy without sugar, because that's what we've looked at and that's what we say. Mm. So, you know, really it's exposing quite a narrow practice that isn't as broad and as patient-based and as specialised as it needs to be.
Okay, well, that's all very interesting. There's a number of things I'd like to pick up on what you said there. One was about that you were talking about the private hospital in some ways being ahead. Well, that kind of makes sense because a private hospital here is the nearest thing we've got to American healthcare, in as much as you're saying it's patient-led. And over there, of course, they are a long way ahead of us because of that very factor. It's a shame. We don't want to give up our NHS, but in a certain way, it's holding back this kind of progress, wouldn't you say?
It is, and I think it's a, you know, it's an ethos, it's a psychological approach that's really, you know, what drives change. It's always money that drives change. And if you've got customers who are unhappy with what you're providing, they'll go elsewhere. Well, that doesn't happen in the NHS.
No.
And the whole issue we have, and it's a tricky one, and it, you know, it doesn't apply to everybody, is that this is a specialist area and certain people are the specialists, and they are specialists in everything. So what we often hear is people making statements about things that really they actually haven't looked at and haven't looked at the research and don't have a broad-based knowledge on, you know, such as nutrition and such as breaking down resistance to treatment and things like that. So, you know, we get a lot of comments that perhaps aren't coming from, you know, the best informed areas, but because they're viewed as, you know, they're viewed as the experts, then that gets taken as an expert. I've had many conversations with clients this week. I've had several conversations with people this week about their, you know, one today with a young lady with lung cancer, who's been told quite adamantly that, you know, glucose and sugar has nothing to do with cancer whatsoever. And not in a causative form, but certainly in, you know, she really should be eating lots of it because it would keep her weight on, you know, and that's not being told by doctors, that's being told by, you know, Macmillan nurses and other specialists as well. So it's, you know, the question of what will drive change is what is going to drive change? What is going to make our medical profession want to, this very aptly named conference, start the conversation. We haven't got to, we haven't got a weight of will on that side of things. We'd love to start the conversation.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, we'd love to get processes into clinical studies, but you know, it's starting that conversation and having it taken seriously.
Yes, well, you know, I'm glad to say there are some doctors who definitely are keen and have are fully embracing a different picture of health. And we got some of them talking at our conference, which is really good. And our hope is that they will be sort of spearheading a change, that they will attract other health professionals who actually admire what they're doing to come along and start the conversation. Because once people get talking and they realise they're not talking to a bunch of idiots, they're talking to very highly skilled and experienced people about nutrition and the like, you know, there's a newfound respect starts to appear, and you have got some genuine exchange of information happening, which is, of course, only valuable to the patient in the end.
Yeah, yeah, we actually have to get people over that, that anything that's outside of the orthodox isn't sort of cranky alternative medicine. Mm. And, you know, that's a message I think, we're trying to get across, is that, you know, that so-called, you know, alternative, everything orthodox is really bad and everything alternative is really good. That world, you know, if not gone altogether, has died back an awful lot and a long time ago.
Yeah, that's good.
And, you know, and emerged from that is this new wave of knowledge and research and integrative medicine, which is all about, you know, focused on the patient and supporting the patient and getting better results, or, you know, and getting better support. And that's what's coming through. And I think, you know, we haven't so far managed to get the medical profession's attention that this is what is going on and what they should be looking at, which is why your conference is so good that everybody should go to.
Thank you.
Indeed.
So the other thing I wanted to pick up on was you mentioned when you were talking at the Maggie Centre that it sounded like, from what you said, that the audience, who are patients, presumably, were very firmly in your camp, so to speak, and had an understanding that sugar was not actually the best way to go. Well, am I right in that?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's now, you know, in the majority of cases, when it comes to broader approaches in integrative medicine, you know, the vast majority of people going into their oncologist are very well informed and very well educated and know what they're talking about. And that's a big challenge for the medical profession, for sure. But, you know, if I look back, you know, sort of 10 years ago, even probably about 8 years ago, people who would come along, to some extent, you had to sell integrated medicine. You know, I just sort of say to them, look, this is what it is, and this is why we're advocating it, because, you know, it is a good thing. And, you know, there's enough behind it to sort of warrant us even talking about it. And, you know, and this... And, you know, there'd be a lot of, well, why don't doctors know? And, you know, why if they knew, surely they'd tell us, etc. I don't often get that these days.
Don't you? Right.
You know, people come along now and they've got it.
Mm.
They've totally got it. There's so much more knowledge out there now. They come along, they've totally got it. We know that this is different to what doctors do, and that they, you know, don't take enough notice of it. But, yeah, okay, we've got that. Let's move on.
Right.
And, you know, you kind of hit the ground with your clients now. It's not a case of having to sell, you know, sort of sell the process anymore at all. And people are, of course, much, you know, much more aware of what's going on around the world. And the fact that supportive integrative medicine is widely practiced and embraced much more in other countries than it is here.
Right.
And, you know, that's something that's, you know, proving to be frustrating for people.
Mm. Well, you know, this situation where actually we have much better informed patients is also a great driver for change, isn't it? I think, you know, there's a sort of hotbed of patients informing each other about what works and social media, which is kind of, you know, it's bypassing the whole of medicine, basically, in a certain way. And why is it happening? Well, because that's the only way it works, you know. And I think at the end of the day that these better and better informed patients are going to be a huge part of the change that actually occurs.
Yeah, no, they absolutely are. You know, they're the pioneers, they're the driving force. And they're the, and as you know, I mean, what counts for evidence, you know, what is convincing, Robin? It's results, isn't it?
It is.
It's people who are doing well, feeling well, have quality of life. It's not all about, you know, people sort of, oh, look, I've taken one compound or changed my diet for 2 weeks and I've gone into complete remission. It's actually, you know, it's much more about people having quality of life and control and you know, longevity, you know, lasting on treatments a lot longer and getting results better than they might otherwise have found.
Right. All right, so you were one of the first professionals I met right back in the early days of Yes Life who didn't sit firmly on one side or other of the great divide, you know, orthodox, alternative.
Mm-hmm.
And so clearly you're a great fan of natural medicine, lifestyle medicine, but you've always retained a pragmatic view that mirrors the proper view from the patient standpoint that only really asks, will this help me? That's all they're interested in, really. And this has led you to recognise the times when conventional techniques do have value and when other methods are the most suitable. So would you outline as what you see the key strengths are and their weaknesses of each of those approaches?
It's difficult to summarise, actually, because it's very much about evaluating the person and where they've been. And the thing with each individual person and their cancer, as you know, and everybody who's been through this experience knows, is you kind of learn a lot about it in retrospect.
Right.
So they might have had chemotherapy and it's failed, which is telling us a lot about that extracellular environment and how it's behaving, etc. So, you know, where the great strengths are, for example, and there are some myths out there about orthodox medicine that are unfair.
Right.
You know, there's gross generalizations made about orthodox medicine, which really doesn't fit as well. So, you know, both sides. And, you know, like you say, I'm very much for, if it, you know, if it's got value, put it on the table. I don't care as long as people get better,
right,
or do as well as they can. Surgery, I'm generally a big fan of. I don't think the case has been proven by any means that by having surgery, you cause cancer to spread. I think cancer can do a very good job of that all by itself, given the right circumstances. And where surgery is potentially going to make a contribution, I'd say out of all the modalities, I think surgery, you know, generally brings the most to the table. And, you know, I do find it rather difficult if I have people come along who've got potentially good outcomes who decide not to have surgery because the downside is they've got an awful lot of work to do, etc. You know, radiotherapy in certain, you know, there's certain types of, you know, radiotherapy, for example, for bone pain, best thing in the world for bone pain. Targeted radiotherapy is very good. And again, like most of the things, when you can minimize the side effects, you can bring a balance that's that has enormous value.
And just to make the point there, that when you say when you can modify the side effects, you can get them under control, the means to do that, of course, is actually through all the other side, it's through the integrative methods, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. This is where the balance comes, and this is, you know, where the two come together, you get a very, very powerful program, because, you know, apart from controlling immediate symptoms, the areas that our orthodox world is not good at is breaking down resistance to treatment. So where, you know, so what we end up doing is moving from one treatment and becomes resistant to the next They're not very good at that. And they're not very good at maintaining the integrity of the immune system and helping the person maintain their quality of life and their health so that when they, you know, so that when they do get to the end of treatment, they're both getting the benefit from the treatment and they're in a good state to kind of capitalize on that and enjoy, you know, the rewards of that, of the, of that quality of life. You don't get that in this country at the moment, you don't get that at all. And yet we've got, you know, the large sort of, you know, menu of things that we've got available to fit in with orthodox treatments to enhance them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you hear, you know, the things like, you know, antioxidants get in the way of chemotherapy, which is a great myth. You know, we recently had a lovely client in London with a triple negative breast cancer, metastatic throughout her bones in a massive way. on a very good program, complete biological response, and is now sort of three clear scans in. So I think we can safely say the antioxidants did not get in the way there. Nice. And you know, so there's a fair few myths out there about what can be done and what can't. So, and chemotherapy, you know, it's like yin and yang with cancer. It's about momentum, and sometimes if cancer is being aggressive and if cancer is, you know, quite active, there are times when, you know, complementary medicine, natural methods just don't cut it. There's no two ways about it. They're not going to.
Right.
And that, you know, that at that point, it's a good argument to sort of say, okay, you know, as undesirable as it might be, let's whack it with some chemotherapy and good support, and then hit the ground running. Let's get you to a stable place where you've then got the opportunity to bring in, you know, wider things. And that's, you know, I don't think that's an unreasonable thing to do at all. You know, I don't buy into gross generalizations about anything, really.
So you're using a heavy-handed method, if you like, in order to slow things up, get things under control, so that you can then do some much better things.
Yeah, if the the occasion calls for it, there's got to be a good argument for it. Mm. There's got to be a good argument for it, and you know, I've had instances this week where there's a very, very poor argument for somebody having chemotherapy in terms of its benefit and what it will gain for them. And, you know, on occasion last week with a young lady where I kind of like, really, you know, go and have the treatment, please. Right. Let's get you safe, because there's too much to do.
Right.
There's too much to do. And, you know, that comes at cost and pressure and all those things. So.
Mm-hmm. But as what you mentioned before, though, again, there are plenty of strategies in the tool bag from integrative medicine to make chemotherapy far less difficult and far less damaging.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And when you look at, you know, you look at all the evidence for the environment which promotes, you know, the activity and the health of the cancer cell, and the cancer cell sitting within that extracellular environment, which is pulling in from that environment what it needs in terms of hypoxia, in terms of inflammatory cells, it's manipulating the immune cells. When you just have chemotherapy and nothing else going on there supporting it, then what you have is the chemotherapy actually manipulating the body's environment in a way that will help the cancer cells. So you might get, you know, you might get the circulating cancer cells, you might get initial tumors sort of shrinking down and counts dropping initially. But without good support throughout treatment, and particularly good recovery after treatment, what you're going to get is that environment is just welcoming the cancer cells right back again. And, you know, I think it's not rocket science. You know, I'm not the cleverest person in the world. It seems quite sensible that, you know, we start the conversation and start looking at how, you know, as the staff at the Cromwell said, we can clearly do a hell of a lot more to help people.
Right.
You know.
It's a good quote. Yes. Okay, so proper integration, where the strengths of both approaches are combined to good effect, as you've just been talking about, is kind of relatively new territory. But in your experience, what are some of the most striking examples of the effect of such combinations being greater than the sum of their parts?
Well, that's the crux of it, Robin, greater than the sum of the parts. And that's the bit that kind of makes it difficult to sell to a medical profession and a scientific community that wants to take everything apart and measure things in isolation. Mm. And, you know, measure things in isolation against... It's what we need to be able to educate everybody about is that you need to come at cancer from all sorts of different ways in supporting the immune system and enabling cancer cells and repairing afterwards. And, you know, when you're dealing with, you know, having chemotherapy and radiotherapy, and this isn't a quote for every chemo and radiotherapy in every situation, but the things that help to break resistance down, oxygen, heat, you know, making sure that inflammation is kept to a minimum, because with inflammation you get angiogenesis. And, you know, we know, for example, that cancer cells utilize certain things in the body environment and even produce them themselves, which allow them to produce their own blood vessels and to thrive. So, you know, certain things can be done, like chelation, to remove those from the body. So many different things at every element. And, you know, one should also mention as well, it's not just about treatment. It's once people have finished treatment, to start exploring some of the elements which might have contributed to them developing cancer in the first place.
Right, so basically what you're opening up is kind of a whole new world of possibilities for improving what we already have, and then going on from there to offer things where there is nothing. In fact, I mean, generally speaking, nobody's been given anything to address the original causes, are they? Within orthodox medicine, they're out on their own. If they've had what they call a successful treatment, then they've gone away with their fingers crossed, hoping for the best.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And a lot of people say and find that finishing treatment is the, you know, the falling off the cliff bit, where, you know, they've been thrown into oncology and the shock and had treatment and had lots of attention, and then it all comes to an end. And as you say, cross your fingers and hope. Well, people don't need to. People can become, you know, we need to move on to, you know, what the Americans do, the survivorship programs. You know, we need to help people repair, you know, the gut gets absolutely destroyed by chemotherapy. The new evidence shows that vitamin D levels don't lower during chemotherapy, they get annihilated. You know, we need to find out where all those imbalances are, and then ask a question that nobody ever asks, you know, is, you know, why did you, healthy person, develop cancer? Because an awful lot of very healthy people with good lifestyles get cancer as well.
Right. Well, I think one of the strengths of integrative medicine is the fact that the messages, if you like, of integrative medicine about what you do in order to make your system strong and cancer resistant are exactly the same messages as you give to people who've never had cancer. It's a consistency that doesn't really exist in orthodox medicine, where you have, you know, your five a day to keep you well, and then if you've got cancer, it doesn't matter what you eat, and you might as well eat, you know, donuts. You know, there's a definite lack of joined upness in the messages that are going out there. But yeah, I think this sort of single health message, which is that if something's good for you, it's good for you, and you might need more of it if you've got cancer or had cancer. But, you know, essentially, it's the same approach, or the same thing is good for you in all circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, looking at the number of people that are getting cancer, and just look around at, you know, we have an increasingly toxic environment. You've only got to look at, you know, the water system, pollution in London. A lot of issues for people who try and do best for themselves is the body's inability to methylate, to detoxify, to cope with this environment that they find themselves in. And, you know, so, some of that can be familial tendencies, and some of it is a body's lack of ability to evolve. I think we're struggling to keep up. You know, so it makes perfect sense to look far more at, you know, a lifestyle and environment. And, you know, as you say, there's this divide between the very narrow practice of oncology, which is just very much focused on, you know, on the individual treatment. And, you know, I spoke to someone today, and they said, you know, I get 5 minutes from my oncologist, and, you know, I don't see the same person twice, and nobody really knows them. And you know, that's very dispiriting when you're, you know, going through this process. So there's a big divide. There's just a big divide in viewpoints and areas that we think are important. And our doctors, our medical professions as well, are working in clinics that are absolutely swamped. So, you know, to expect them to take an awful lot of stuff on board and you know, to start to embrace wider things is actually quite a tall order. And it's not surprising that, you know, it's bottom of the pile for levels of interest. You know, but what we need to do is to sort of, you know, to get, you know, get that conversation going and get them, you know, there are other people who've got the expertise. There are other people who've got the knowledge. There are other people who can bring in, you know, research at a high level that can actually sort of say, you know what, yes, this should definitely be part of what's going on for people.
Well, it's very important, that, isn't it? We're not asking oncologists to become experts in nutrition, because the people who are expert are already out there. And and embracing those extra resources, it's hard to prove this, but I think both you and I would agree that the likelihood is this is actually going to cost far less to the healthcare service because people will be far less demanding and in a much better condition, and it'll actually make the whole system much less stressful and run better.
Yeah, I don't think it would be difficult, and it certainly wouldn't be expensive in terms of cancer research money spent per year, to actually be able to run some studies where we embrace the whole program rather than sort of saying, okay, let's put this compound up against permetrexed and see how that goes. But to run whole programs that contribute to people's good health, and then measure the outcomes, measure the quality of life. You know, I saw a young lady today with lung cancer, she very unfortunately found herself being given one of the new immunotherapies, and which didn't work at all for her, sadly. And then the next day was sat watching a program on the TV about the medical profession and how the new immunotherapies are changing life, you know, are going to change cancer, etc. And because, you know, and it comes down to, again, because we don't work with the body's environment with these treatments, that we get this, you know, we get this resistance. And, you know, this is where, you know, we will find that, you know, these things come through in research now, you know, like T-cell exhaustion, where, you know, the immune system is so flattened by chemotherapy to then go and give an immunotherapy. I think in the fullness of time, we will see that in Great Britain, we don't do so well with immunotherapies as other countries do. Right. That might follow the pattern that we've had all the way through, that, you know, with other cancer treatments, we are not leading the board by any means and never have been. And I think, you know, the medical profession would do well to ask themselves a question: is this about access to drugs? Is this about access to all the new therapies and the new things coming through from the drug companies? Or is it because the practice is too narrow? And I think we could prove very easily the practice is too narrow.
Well, that's a very good point. Yeah, well, wouldn't it be great to be able to do that? So look, I want to talk now a bit about the obstacles to progress and where the quick wins might be. I mean, obviously there are some professionals who are never going to accept the validity of the need for integration, but increasingly, lifestyle medicine is becoming equated with common sense when it comes to lifestyle diseases. And of course, cancer is known to largely be a lifestyle disease. So what do you see are the major obstacles to progress in oncology, and where do you see are the places where the message of integration is the most likely to be heard?
Well, I think the kind of away from the actual doctors, as I said earlier, you know, you do see a great interest and a great willingness by other medical professions to listen and to be interested. And I think, you know, it's a difficult question, actually. How are we going to bring about that change and get that interest going? There has to be, I think there has to be some way of finding out with the medical profession, you know, what it is that they would require in terms of, you know, what is acceptable to them in just sort of starting this ball rolling. And, you know, I mean, I think, you know, we are seeing, you know, a lot of doctors sort of saying, oh, eat a healthy diet, etc. But then where do people go to that? Because quite frankly, the dietitians don't always follow that through with the advice that they give out. And I think really, you know, if you're going to start from the basics with the nutrition side, I think the dietetic services need to look at the evidence that there is. Not for some, you know, sort of weird diet that's, you know, kind of taking people off into all sorts of imbalances, but at the broader knowledge of what can be helpful, and particularly at how cancer cells metabolize sugar, and look at, are they actually providing evidence-based practice? You know, do they actually is the evidence actually there to support that people should eat donuts and cream cakes and stuff like that? And that's a good way to keep weight on, because actually, frankly, I find with people who are losing weight, that doesn't help. I find people don't actually put weight on, they actually lose more weight They're just promoting the whole glucose metabolization. Mm. So I think nutritionists could do with taking a good look at and opening up to their practice, and whoever's got the most influence. In an ideal way, what we need is an integrated practice, an integrated board to sort of run alongside the doctors, that in a way that is acceptable to them, sort of say, we are practicing good evidence-based support. You don't have to do it. You do your bit because you are full on with doing your chemotherapy and radiotherapy, frankly, and dealing with some of the dreadful problems people have. Let us run alongside that. That's what you'd want to see in every oncology clinic.
Mm. Now, I think you're absolutely right about that, is that, asking oncologists to kind of broaden their skills is not the way to go, but we are asking them to broaden their minds, though. We're actually wanting them to be open to some other skills there are in order to be able to assist them with what they're doing and to work with them. And, yeah, I think you're right. They need to have the security of a recognised form, if you like, of this, where they know they can trust the people they're talking to, or the resources that are being used, that they are actually the best, and that's fair enough.
Yeah, they are. The doctors, they have clinical responsibility, so they kind of put that they have clinical responsibility for everything. So if they're not sure, or the evidence is unclear, or it's something they just don't know about, then clinical responsibility is always going to come down to, I don't know, so the safe answer is no to everything. Right. And that's what's got to change, is that safe answer being no.
Yes.
And getting, being given the resources to provide them with the evidence to sort of say, the safe answer is actually in this instant, yes, these people know what they're talking about, go talk to them.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a very good point. And there's a couple of things that come to mind from that. One is, you remember Lord Sarchu, when his wife died a few years ago, described Orthodox care as being endlessly repeating a failed experiment. He was particularly talking about care for his wife's condition, but nonetheless, I think you could apply that to lots of the standard of care treatments that are being doled out, that everybody knows they don't work, but they're the best they've got, so they do it. And within that, there's no scope for improvement.
No, and you see the same things, you're quite right. You see the same poor results for the same cancers. Right. There's some areas that are powered on and, done well and are improving. But certain cancers where, you are just seeing the same things repeated time and again, and I know better now than when I started working with cancer 25 years ago.
Right, yeah. So, I'm always pushing for a new way of looking at the kind of evidence side of things, because, there's this, always this looking for the gold standard evidence, we haven't got the randomised controlled trials, and therefore we don't do it. They're just not fair to even to place those on, a nutritional approach, because, A, they're almost impossible to apply, and, B, they're never going to be applied because of the cost. And a much more reasonable and pragmatic approach in an area, particularly where there's the results are so poor, is, well, is this going to do any harm? And if you're absolutely sure that it's not going to do any harm, or the likelihood is so small that it's worth going for, then I think that is a much more reasonable way to assess something which has some promise. Mm. Even if the evidence isn't there, if you know it's not going to do any harm, and it could do some good, then, well, you might find something else if you try it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, when you do look at the clinical trials that are going on, lifestyle, is certainly creeping in there in terms of, they're looking at, will exercise improve things, will turmeric improve things in certain areas? There's a creeping in. There's certainly more on the exercise and lifestyle of this clinical studies going off, and one or two other bits. But it's still, from my perspective, it's still not broad enough to make the impact that would be measurable. Mm. It's still too narrow, and it gets worrying and scary that it's kind of destined to fail because it's not enough. Mm. And it's not what we would do. They're certainly making some inroads, but and as anybody with cancer will tell you, sorry, but that's not fast enough. I'm not going to sit here for 3 years waiting for a clinical study to finish.
That's right.
To find out if I can do something.
Everybody with cancer is in a kind of emergency condition, and the attitude of a person with cancer is, I'm going to try anything, well, a lot of them anyway, are prepared to try anything that might help them and isn't going to harm them. And, of course, some of them will even try some things which will almost certainly harm them but might help them as well. They might even go that far. So it's a very different attitude, of course, to the attitude that's being taken with this ultra caution that's being placed on them by the oncologists.
I think, and particularly in the past, the ultra caution was certainly in place because of, I think there was a much wider, cranky area of complementary medicine, with people being encouraged to do things that were imbalanced and dangerous, and you know, obviously made no didn't make much sense at all. But you know, people, as you say, you know, they'll think, well, sod it, I'm going to try it. And I think, you know, again, we need to find a way to get the medical profession to recognise that, you know, okay, if you're on the internet, you'll still find some cranky stuff if you want it. But you know, you come to any of our conferences, you come to any of our seminars, come and talk to us, you will actually find that that is not what we're talking about at all. No. That is not the world that we exist in. You know, that's a different world out there. I don't think we'll ever get rid of that slightly cranky world, but you know.
No, probably not. Well, not until you can reliably treat cancer with. We got some brilliant speakers from within the NHS during our morning sessions at the conference. We're going to be hearing from Dr. Rangan Chatterjee, BBC Doctor in the House, Dr. Rupi Orgler of the Doctor's Kitchen, Professor Robert Thomas, oncologist and champion of lifestyle medicine for cancer, and Dr. Malcolm Kendrick, writer and fearless critic of ineffective medical interventions. So the fact that we're able to host such an impressive lineup of authoritative NHS professionals to support the cause of integration, I imagine, is as seriously heartening and vindicating of all your efforts over the last 15 years or so as it is for us.
Well, I think that's one of the biggest statements I've ever seen, to be honest. Apart from what we see abroad being achieved, I think, you know, and congratulations to you, I think this is the biggest and best event that I've seen put together. That really, you know, wow, what a lineup, and all brilliant people who are genuinely interested and, you know, and pushing the boundaries. It's fantastic.
Well, it's really good to have such serious people prepared to be outspoken about this stuff, because of course it's not only is it great for the public who already adhere to a lot of the messages which they're saying, you can't help but feel this great sort of wave of heroism, you know, being applied to somebody like Dr. Chatterjee coming on the BBC there, taking people off drugs and changing their lifestyle and they get better. You know, that's, you know, at last, you know, somebody's doing this stuff publicly and really standing up for it. It's very exciting for the public. But even more importantly, I think, is that he is sort of treading a path for other doctors to follow, you know, for other doctors to become inspired by. And I think there are many, many frustrated, burnt-out GPs around the country who are going to be really excited by the prospect of being able to help people in the way that he is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, once the ball is rolling and the momentum goes with it, that, you know, there must be an awful lot of doctors who at times look at the practice of just dispensing pharmaceuticals all the time, who don't sometimes think, you know, gosh, you know, isn't there better ways of doing this? And, you know, but you know, I haven't got the evidence to prove it, but aren't there better ways? So, you know, you get a groundbreaker like that, as you say, who's got the guts to sort of say, right, you know, I'm going to stand up for this, I'm going to do it, I'm going to try it. And, you know, watching those programs, just seeing the empowerment of people and the way they walk out the surgery, not sort of with the shoulders down and clutching their little prescription, but walking out with, I'm in charge, I've got my role to play. And that's, you know, that's exactly what we kind of try to achieve with our clients, is that empowerment and putting them in charge. And I think the medical profession exposed to the right level of knowledge and the right support and everything else, why wouldn't they embrace it?
Right.
Exactly. It'd be mad not to.
Yeah. And, you know, we've got Professor Robert Thomas, who's another complete groundbreaker. He's been, for years, he's been out there giving people lifestyle consultations when they come to him with cancer. I mean, if he can do it, anyone can do it, you know. And it's great that he's prepared to stick his neck out in that way. And obviously, it is very groundbreaking, what his whole approach. And he's very outspoken about it as well, which can in the end only provide a path for that, for others to follow.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a, you know, he's a hero and a complete pioneer. And I'm sure we'll look back in years to come and, you know, this will become very largely normal. Yeah. I'm sure it will. It has to, because it can't not come normal. And, you know, people like Professor Thomas and Dr. Chatterjee, etc., you know, they will be the pioneers and the leaders in the medical profession.
Well, I'm sure it can't come soon enough for you. You've say been pushing this message for, well, probably more than 15 years, and, you know, very consistently, and for good reason, because, of course, you're able to see that you really can help people. That's the point. You're empowered by it. You have some real stuff in your tool bag, and you can almost certainly say to people that you can make their lives better and possibly longer.
Well, they can make their lives better and longer, and and they've got a tremendous amount of tools, and given the right information and support, it's all about giving. You know, you can't change everything for everybody, but you give people the very best possible situation in which to work, and when you do that, and things fall into place, you know, it can go from being pretty helpful to pretty damn good to pretty miraculous at times, you know, and it's you know, it's absolutely brilliant, of course it is.
Yeah, it's very inspiring. All right, well, look, I think we're going to wrap it up there. Thanks very much for coming on the show today. When it comes to integration and oncology, you are definitely a go-to resource. Anyway, I'm looking very much forward to seeing you at our conference on the 25th of November.
I'm very much looking forward to it as well. It's going to be fantastic. And as I say again, well done, you, for putting all this together. You keep talking about all these pioneers. What about yourself? You've made more achievements than anyone, and, you know, as a member of the public, to really push this forward.
Well, if it helps, I'm good, a very happy man. Okay, thank you, Patricia.
Welcome. Okay, take care.
Quite apart from all the expertise and experience that will be shared at the conference on the 25th of November, there will be the opportunity to meet pioneers and specialists such as Patricia to build your own network of contacts and resources, whether you're someone with cancer or indeed a practitioner of some kind working to support those with cancer. There's less than a week to this important event, so if you haven't already secured your seat, go to the Yes to Life website, that's yestolife.org.uk, and click the link on the homepage to starting the conversation while there's still a chance of getting a place. Also on the Yes to Life homepage, you'll find a link to the Yes to Life show details page, where you can find further links to material related to today's show. I hope you enjoyed the show, and I look forward to seeing many of you on the 25th at the conference. Do say hello. I'll be back next week with another Yes to Life show, so please make a point of joining me again. Goodbye. Thank you.